Hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach. This is Stephanie Domingo.
And Tux Lerzel.
We come to you from Bushwick, Brooklyn, where we record on land belonging to the Lenape Nation, a nation that is one of many still very much out here doing its thing, and we'd like to acknowledge that.
We sure fucking would.
This is the show about scandals and scandalousness in American politics and government.
Both of those things. Yes. Scandals and scandalousness.
We be drinking and we be swearing, as is our way.
Heck yes.
Get with us. Get on our level.
Today, we are drinking Heck something. Yes. From... I did that.
What? That this was a, grandma over here. That was a hilarious
yolk. No. So today, we're drinking a cocktail from the early 90s.
It looks like poison. It does look like poison. But it's okay. I will take my vitamins tomorrow because I didn't take them today.
It's not right, but it's okay.
Whitney, man, she knew.
It's not right.
She was talking about this drink. She
was. y'all motherfuckers are drinking this shit. It's not right, but it's okay.
It's okay for you. Yeah.
You guys have heard me talk many a time about how much I hate 80s cocktails.
Yes.
On this show, I have said this countless times, myriad times.
Ooh, myriad.
But basically, early 90s cocktails are the same damn thing. We were drinking the same shit in the early 90s that we were drinking in the 80s. Later in the 90s, like around like 96, 97, 98, we finally started to see the very, very beginnings of this like great cocktail culture resurgence. But earlier in the 90s, we were still drinking the same shit as in the 80s, but maybe with even stupider names.
Good times.
So when I needed to come up with a cocktail for this episode, I reached out to our bartender friend, Zan. And I was basically, literally I texted Zan, what were douchey bros drinking in LA in the 90s? Immediately he wrote back, adios, motherfucker.
Oh, no.
Yikes. Yes. So we are drinking an adios, motherfucker. So we're friends with Zan because he and my husband, Russell, were really good friends in L.A. in the 90s when they were young. So I'm like, okay, Zan knows what he's talking about. He knew what they were drinking.
Zan be knowing.
Yes.
Okay.
I had never heard of an adios motherfucker. I had to look it up. It turned out to be perfect for this episode. Absolutely perfect. Not only because it was the drink of choice for young white turds in Los Angeles in the 90s. Not the young white turds. But also because I am doing another story about police fuckery. And if you recall, when I did my story about the City Hall riot in New York City in the 90s, we drank a Long Island iced tea.
We sure did. We were very skeptical as we drank. It was a smaller portion.
We drank it.
We both were just like,
didn't. By the end of that episode, we had maybe consumed like a quarter of it because we're like, we're going to be destroyed.
Because there's so much alcohol in it.
When I posted the cocktail recipe before the episode actually came out, people thought we were going to get like, drunk. You guys are going to be tanked.
And yeah.
Like, joke's on you. We're not even going to drink it.
I know. Totally. We really didn't. I kept like gauging like your amount of like cocktail.
The full recording was finished and I dumped half of it in the sink because I'm like,
I think that we need to drink this all.
We're going to drink this one. Yeah.
It looks like it's going to give us cancer.
Yeah, it does. So the reason that we're talking about this and feeling like we can drink this is basically an adios motherfucker is essentially a Long Island iced tea with an LA twist. In place of the triple sec, they use blue curacao, which is also orange flavored, but it's neon blue. And instead of cola, you use Sprite or 7-Up or some kind of lemon lime soda. Other than that, though, it's the same fucking drink, except for the fact that a Long Island iced tea looks like iced tea in the glass. And this looks like a big, tall glass of drain cleaner with a lemon twist.
Yeah, it looks like a pool with a lot of chlorine in it.
So the adios motherfucker also goes by some other names. Some people call it the AMF. Or the adios mother effer, because they're afraid to curse in public. Oh my God.
These are the let's go Brandon.
Yes. Oh, we have an AMF, please.
They're like, let me scooch on by you. I need an AMF.
I'm just going to scooch.
I'm going to scooch.
It also goes by the name Walk Me Down.
What?
Some people call it a blue motorcycle. Some people call it a Boston Tea Party.
What?
I don't know why.
Ew.
Don't make no sense. No,
that
doesn't...
That's incorrect.
Yes. This one is... It's not right and it's not okay.
No, I agree.
The one thing is I wasn't really able to find out a lot of information about the Adios Motherfucker, like the history.
is there history?
Well, that's like, the thing is, it's the 90s, like this wasn't a cocktail that was sort of like created independently. So there's not really a lot of history there. You know what I mean? It was it was basically a Long Island iced tea that they're like, let's do something different to a Long Island iced tea. It was most likely created sometime in the 80s, although I did read some comments on different cocktail posts saying, some people were saying that they had been drinking them even in the 70s, as early as the 70s.
For shame.
Yeah. Seriously. But either way, by the 90s, these were very popular, especially in Southern California.
Tacky.
There actually are a bunch of different twists on Long Island iced teas. When I was a college student in the Adirondacks, we used to drink one called the Grateful Dead that is basically a Long Island iced tea, but instead of cola, they do a float of Chambord liqueur, which, you know, is fine.
Yeah.
I wouldn't drink it today, but I would say that I wouldn't, but here I am about to taste an Adios Motherfucker. So cheers.
Yeah. Oh.
When I was a kid at school learning the golden rule, teacher often used to say, if you don't tell a lie, there's not a reason why you can't be like Washington someday. How could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie?
It literally is like Drano with a lemon twist. It's so
bright. The blue is so bright. It tastes like nothing, like juice.
It's very sweet.
It's very, very sweet.
And very citrusy.
It tastes like Hawaiian punch.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't taste boozy.
But sweeter. No, I don't taste any booze.
And it's all booze.
Almost like a syrup. Like we're drinking a syrup.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually kind of incredible how they're able to mask so much alcohol with just like sweetness and like a twist of lemon.
Yeah. Wild. I can certainly see why young white men in California really enjoyed drinking this in the 90s because it literally tastes like Kool-Aid.
Maybe Kool-Aid is less sweet.
Yeah. All right. So the one difference between this recipe and the recipe that people really would have been drinking in the 90s is that they certainly would have been using sour mix. Whereas like we did when we made the Long Island iced tea, we used a mix of simple syrup and fresh citrus juice. I would say if we were going to have a second one of these that I would use less simple syrup the next time, but we're not going to have a second one of these.
Oh no. I feel like we owe it to ourselves to drink it all.
I am excited to consume this entire thing.
That is plenty.
Yeah.
I think we're going to be fantastic.
Again though, that we are drinking these
a
smaller glass than
But still it's a lot. Like we're not making it up when we say we can taste no alcohol.
None.
I can taste no alcohol.
Zero. Like, all I taste is sugar and citrus.
Yeah, same. It tastes like a sweet syrup to me.
Like a lemon candy.
Yeah.
Delightful. All right, so let's dive into this story from the 1990s. 1990s.
Ah, yes, we're from the 1900s.
We are, yes. We're products of the 1900s. All right, so in the past couple of years, we have been hearing a lot about police misconduct and violence, and especially hearing about the seeming immunity that police have from any consequences for their actions.
Yeah, consequences. What's that?
I've never heard of it. But did you know that in California, Los Angeles sheriffs have taken things far beyond the blue wall of silence and started to form literal gangs within their departments?
I have heard whisperings about that there's like multiple gangs. Within the LAPD that they go around like doing crime.
For some reason, it tends to be within sheriff's departments. It's not like regular police are not doing this.
Worse.
Yeah.
Right?
No, totally. 100%.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, they have a bigger jurisdiction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's way worse.
But like regular police aren't doing this, which is confusing.
I guess that's good.
Yeah.
But I guess you mature up to feeling comfortable right. enough to do crime.
Yeah.
And terrorize people.
Yeah. Yeah, these deputy gangs allegedly engage in violent criminal behavior against the communities they're sworn to protect, and even clash with other law enforcement officers.
I've heard about that, yeah. Yes.
It turns out that these gangs are actually nothing new. They have reportedly been thriving in Los Angeles County since the 1970s.
Oh my God.
Yes. Many share common features like hierarchical structures, intensive recruitment, hazing of younger officers, wow. and a resistance to outsiders. But one of the most common and recognizable features is membership tattoos.
What?
Tattoos.
Tattoos? Yes,
tattoos.
They get tattoos?
Yes. According to reports...
Isn't that bad, though? Because then you could be like... They could be like, oh, hey, you're in a gang?
I read something about, like... I cut this from my outline, so I don't have the facts straight. So don't quote me on this, but I remember reading something about someone... where they were suggesting that to root out these gangs, that they should be looking for the tattoos.
The tattoos, yes, and of course.
The gang members were like, that's like, it's unconstitutional. You can't look at my body. Like, I'm not going to let you look for tattoos. And like, you can fight me on that, basically.
But you are a public servant. So maybe let's say that your body, I don't want to say it's public property, but like your salary is being paid by people who want to know if you have certain tattoos. We're not asking to see your asshole because it's not on your asshole.
I don't see how that's any of your business. So okay. Whether or not I have a gang tattoo on my body, that's none of your business.
That is actually my business.
I am paying your salary after all.
I know that you think that it's none of my business, but like, let me just not pay my taxes.
I wish so I had you get kept no money. This part in my outline because there was like a really gross quote about how it was... a violation to be asked whether or not someone had these tattoos.
You're a public servant.
I mean, that doesn't mean you have to serve the public.
Okay, you're right. You're right. You're right.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really fucked up. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to let you proceed. But like, wow.
Thank you.
I'm just going to let my mind like melt into my skull.
Yes. So according to reports, these tattoos often have to be earned, quote unquote earned, sometimes by nice. Acts of violence against the residents in their jurisdiction, or cool. sometimes by illegally falsifying reports or violating departmental protocol, what? Showing their loyalty to their gang.
What?
Mm-hmm. No big deal.
Violating, like, protocol, like, to show your loyalty to the gang?
That you're more loyal to the gang than you are to the department, essentially. That's how you become a gang member, mm-hmm. yes. So, deputy gangs are not exclusive to Los Angeles County, but they certainly have proliferated there. The LA Times reported, quote, defenders say the cliques are harmless fraternities, likening them to close-knit groups in the military. But time and again, the deputy clubs have come under fire for promoting aggressive tactics and an us versus everyone mentality.
Oh my God.
That we know of, there are currently, at least that we know of, 18 gangs within the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department.
What?
18. But
that's a lot.
It is a lot for Los Angeles like, County. Los Angeles like County.
Two is a lot for one county.
Two is a
lot, yeah.
Yeah. But there have not been any internal investigations or significant policy changes to address the issue of these gangs, despite their rapid growth over the past 50 years.
Oh.
In those years, evidence shows that these deputy gangs have killed at least, least 19 people,
fuck.
All of whom were men of color, and at least four of whom were mentally ill.
Oh my God.
Los Angeles County keeps a list of lawsuits related to deputy gangs. And
what?
Yes. Because they know that this is happening.
So why don't they crack down on it?
Fully aware. Because district attorneys don't want to go against the police. Because if the police don't cooperate with their investigations, they won't be able to do their jobs.
I get that. But the fact that there are 18 gangs within your jurisdiction, like what but the fuck are you even doing? But my job
would be harder.
They're running the shit.
Yeah. Like, literally.
What are you
literally.
Even doing here? Yeah. Like why even? Whatever. Okay.
Litigation to cases related to these gangs has cost the county, Los Angeles County, over $100 million over the past 30 years.
They don't care.
Yeah. So I would like to propose a toast. Raise a glass. Toast to defunding the police.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Or at least making them pay for the lawsuits and settlements caused by their own misconduct 1,000%.
I think they should have insurance.
Literally.
They should have to have insurance because this shit would end like the day they had to get insurance.
Literally.
And have to pay with their own money for 100%. What they did.
If taxpayers weren't fucking foot in the bill, if y'all had to pay this shit,
it'd be over.
It would be over. Police leadership might actually do something. And they would have to serve the public. Yeah, exactly. Police leadership might actually do something to stop their officers from acting like vigilante cowboys with a license to kill.
Yeah.
And might actually fucking make them do some real police work.
Mm-hmm.
Ha! Anyways, I'm going to give a little bit of a trigger warning here.
Oh.
I just want to warn everyone before I dive into this episode.
I gotta go.
I know. This story will contain some brief but graphic descriptions of violence. There's a lot of violence.
Okay.
I'm about to throw at you. At least we have this bright blue cocktail to consume while we're hearing about it. So under the California Penal Code, a criminal gang is described as any organization or group of three or more people that has a common name or identifying sign or symbol, has as one of its primary activities the commission of one of a long list of California criminal offenses, and whose members have engaged in a pattern of criminal gang activity, either alone or together. Sheriff's deputy gangs certainly fit this description.
Yeah.
As far as we know, the first deputy gang in Los Angeles County was called the Little Devils. The Little Devils.
You're calling your... Okay.
So cool. Cutesy. Yes.
Cool.
In 1973, an internal memo listed 47 known members working in the East Los Angeles Sheriff's Station, all of whom had the same signature Red Devil tattoo.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Okay. Deputies appeared to take pride in the terror they inflicted on the Latin community they served. And along with their Red Devil tattoo, they also nicknamed the East Los Angeles Sheriff's Station Fort Apache, referencing a 1948 John Ford Western about a U.S. cavalry outpost that was essentially surrounded by native tribes that they considered dangerous savages.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so fucked up.
So they're like the white men. This is the
community that you're supposed to be serving.
Exactly. They're dangerous savages. And you're seeing
everyone as a dangerous savage. But then again, I think a lot of people get into law enforcement just to hurt people.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which is sad.
So following the Little Devils, a bunch of other gangs started popping up in the 1980s. Again, for whatever reason, most of these gangs, like the Cavemen or the Bandidos, proliferated especially among sheriff's deputies rather than regular police officers. Wow. However, some gangs also started popping up amongst corrections officers in corrections facilities.
What?
Yes. There was a lot of...
Because they have so much power
exactly.
there. They have ultimate power.
Yeah.
When you have people in cages.
Exactly. The posse operated out of the Twin Towers Correctional Facility and allegedly targeted incarcerated people struggling with mental health issues.
Oh, God.
Yes. The 3000 Boys operated out of the Men's Central Jail, and they would, quote, earn their ink...
Oh, no.
...by breaking inmates' bones.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. That's how they earned their tattoos. The Wayside Whiteys...
Put all these people away somewhere?
No.
I mean, no.
I wish, but no. No, that's not going to happen.
Because
they're all at this point, because this was in the 80s and 90s, they're all retiring with six-figure pensions at this point. So, yeah. The Wayside Whiteys operated out of the Peter J. Pitches Detention
Center.
That
was the name they chose?
Yes, the Wayside Whiteys.
Okay.
They surprisingly targeted black prisoners.
Oh, that is. What?
Especially,
you don't say. I know,
especially those who were violent towards the white prisoners in the facility. The Whiteys used hand signs where they crossed their middle fingers, creating a W, like this. Yes.
Hilarious.
Gang signs. Yes.
That's so, like, I don't know, old. old person.
So in the late 1980s, attorneys who were pursuing cases against police structures in Los Angeles counties asked a man named David Lynn, a private investigator who focused on human rights violations, to look into the Wayside Whiteys.
They're called the Wayside Whiteys.
I know.
Like Exhibit A through X. Yeah, like, seriously. What the fuck?
Yeah. Quote, "That was the first gang that we heard of."
Oh, okay.
"And such a blatantly horrific name."
Accurate.
Yes. Despite the evidence Lynn found against the Wayside Whiteys, the case never made it to trial.
Wow.
Lynn says that's common with deputy gang cases. Quote, "The county does not want these cases going to trial because then you get deputies and victims under oath, and they avoid that at all costs."
Yeah, because the city would be liable then if it's on the record.
Yeah, exactly.
They'd have to pay money and damages for.
I mean, they still have to throw money at these people. Yeah. The county just.
Well, because there's so much evidence, because these people aren't. I mean, because they're law enforcement and they know that there's no recourse or, like, I mean, they are the law.
Yeah.
So they're not trying to, like, be slick about it.
No, not at all. So this quote continues, "The county just keeps throwing money at the defendants and the lawyers. It's a business."
If that's what it takes.
It all comes down to the DAs not wanting to make their own lives difficult by prosecuting the sheriffs.
Yeah, because they would come after them and probably kill them, perhaps.
Or, well, like, but also they would just, everyone else that was in the gang that wasn't convicted would make their lives a living hell. Because they wouldn't cooperate with investigations and they wouldn't testify against the people they were trying to put away. So it would just make their lives difficult and they don't want to deal with that. It would make their jobs difficult, is what I mean. In 1988, Lynn was asked to look into another case, the murder of Hong Pyo Lee. Lee had been driving through Compton the morning of March 8th, 1988, when, according to sheriff's deputies, he ran a stop sign. They tried to pull him over, and they claim that he sped off, leading them on a chase all across freeways and surface streets towards Long Beach, where two local Long Beach police officers joined the pursuit. When he finally came to a stop, deputies approached his vehicles, drew their guns, and ordered him to surrender. But before he could get out of the car, all of the deputies opened fire, shooting him 9 times in the back.
Oh my God.
While he was still sitting in his car. The local Long Beach police officer, one of the two, turned to his partner and said, "We just observed the sheriff's department execute somebody."
Yeah.
So the report from the district attorney acknowledged several inconsistencies between the accounts of the deputies and those of the local officers. But somehow the DA still found that the deputies had acted in self-defense.
They were afraid, you know? Don't you know?
A man sitting in his car with his back to them.
Afraid of, just the public that they're supposed to serve. Mm-hmm. Anything could happen when someone's back is turned and they're just minding their business. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not armed or anything, but, you know.
It's fine.
They're just scared. What if?
Terrifying.
Hey, okay. Maybe his eyes shoot lasers. Okay. Have you thought about that?
Well, his eyes are facing the other way, but, like...
Hey, okay, he could turn them quick.
Maybe he has eyes in the back of his head.
Ooh, see?
He might be their grandmother.
The defense rests.
Where was I? So, as far as we know,
You were at eyes in the back that are lasers. Yes. Go on.
Laser eyes in the back of his head. As far as we know, no one was ever disciplined for this.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no one. When Lee's family filed a federal lawsuit, the attorneys they hired recruited David Lynn to investigate. And that was when he discovered another sheriff's deputy gang called the Linwood Vikings. He said that during his investigation into these deputy gangs, quote, "One of them told me that in order to beat the gangs, you had to fight them on their own terms. You had to be like a gang member." And that's kind of their mentality. So basically... They were saying, the deputies were saying, "We became gang members because we were trying to fight fire with fire."
I don't buy that, but go on.
No, it's garbage.
Okay.
It's fucking garbage.
Cool.
Yeah. So Lynn said that as a former Marine, he had his own theories about why deputy gangs were so pervasive within the department. In 1990, he wrote an opinion piece for the Long Beach Press-Telegram saying, "In Vietnam, we served in a place where we didn't belong. We really didn't care what happened to the people who lived there.
What?
When it was over, we were going home. We were taught that the lives of the Vietnamese didn't carry the same weight as ours and that of our fellow soldiers. Similarly, Linwood deputies are paid to drive in to fight a war in a community that they have no vested interest in. They spend their days and nights in Linwood abusing and maliciously disrupting the lives of those who look, act, and live differently than they do. Linwood deputies now know, as we knew in Vietnam, that their superiors approve of their actions and that there are no consequences for their acts.
Damn. It sounds like the NYPD.
I mean,
coming in from Long Island.
Exactly.
Doing what they do.
And this is the same exact era that this was happening, of the same exact era of the City Hall riot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this is happening now. But
I mean, still. Yeah, exactly. But Lynn's out here dropping big facts on these fuckers.
Telling on yourself.
Yeah. Well, yeah, just because he was a Marine during Vietnam doesn't mean that he agreed with how it all went down, but...
Yes.
Yeah. So, Lynn discovered, essentially, that the Linwood Vikings operated very much like a criminal street gang. They referred to their gang as LVS 25, or Linwood Vario Sheriff Station 25. They would flash one another gang hand signs, and they spray-painted graffiti in their jurisdiction mark their turf.
That's so extreme.
Yes. Vikings even adopted street terms, communicating with each other, referring to members as homeboys.
Stop it.
And veteran officers as OG.
Oh, God. Chad, stop stale it.
Stale-ass white men.
Steve, Chad, stop it.
Grow up.
Don't do it.
I mean...
Like... You saw these terms like on Reddit.
Literally.
You did a Google search. You're like, okay, this is what's popping in the streets. But also, no one's saying popping in the streets anymore. So you're wrong. Wow. No.
No. Literally, just no. Just stop just it.
No. No.
Put your Dockers and your bald spot away, come Chad. On. Lynn said that regular activities for the Vikings included trespassing into area homes,
wearing khakis.
Assault with a deadly weapon, torture, and even murder.
Wait.
This is just how the Vikings operated. The people were just terrified. If you were black or brown and walking down the street, it's fair game. One former Viking sergeant described his time in law enforcement, quote, hunting for humans.
Oh.
It's a lot of fun.
I mean, that's why he got the job.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Wow.
Good times. Again, they weren't just targeting area residents. As early as 1985, the Vikings were also going after other deputies who didn't support or tried to file reports against the Vikings. In one incident, a Viking deputy reported another deputy's personal car as stolen and claimed that the driver of the car was armed and dangerous because they were trying to get other officers to hunt this man down for Whoa. Coming out against them.
Wow.
The Viking deputy was charged with making a false criminal report, but he was acquitted she was acquitted after a 10-day trial. During the trial, the other deputy, whose car was reported stolen, testified that he and other top Linwood brass were repeatedly harassed by their fellow deputies. He said that he'd received prank phone calls, had the fender kicked off his car, had received a Valentine's Day gift with a dead rat inside.
Holy shit.
Two deputies once tried to run him off the road with their car. And another time, two hearses were dispatched to his house at 3:00 in the morning. A black sergeant once received a loaded gun in the mail that was rigged to fire upon opening. Having received suspicious packages in the mail before, he called the bomb squad. Thank
Amazing.
God. Amazing. Yes.
Amazing. Wow. It's sad that he had to do that, but like there's a pattern
of exactly.
intimidation happening here already. Wow.
Another sergeant in the sheriff's department allegedly found dead dogs in the back of his car.
Oh, no.
Animal feces smeared under the hood of his car and cow tongues hung in his locker. When that sergeant relocated to another station, one Viking bragged to a reporter that the gang had, quote, ran him out.
So coordinated.
I know. Seriously. Yeah.
Then again, they're a gang.
Exactly.
This is what they
do. They're literally a gang. So Lynn says that to join the gang, the Linwood Vikings, A deputy had to prove their loyalty to their fellow Vikings by doing things like falsifying reports.
What?
His investigation confirmed that Vikings would award tattoos to members, to new members, based on whether or not they were able to prove themselves. Each member had a tattoo of a Viking always located on their left calf. And while most Viking members were white men, occasionally they did recruit a few select deputies of color.
Mm.
But if they chose a deputy of color, they had their tattoos modified to signify their heritage. So like you had a black Viking tattoo if you were a black man, or
that is very gross.
Yeah. On that note, I think this is time for us to take a little break.
Yes. Yeah. I'm going to throw myself into the Hudson real quick.
Yes.
I guess the East River is closer.
Or the LA River is probably more appropriate though.
I can't get there fast enough for my needs.
Yes. All right, we'll be right back. Thankfully, I don't have to make another drink because. But we're doing better than we did last time. We're about halfway through.
We're getting through.
Yeah. All right. Be right back.
Hey, this is Brandon from Peculiar Picture Show, the podcast that talks about movies, maladies, and mental health.
And this is Maria, also from that podcast.
So we were wondering, do you like movies? Do you like mental health?
Oh boy, do I ever, Brandon.
Well then, I've got a podcast for you. Peculiar Picture Show is the podcast for you because it is about movies and mental health.
That's right. We use movies to talk about mental health issues like borderline personality disorder, social issues like systemic racism, and other things.
Like how bad Shakespeare in Love was.
Yeah, sometimes we just talk about how bad the movie is.
And we really talked about that one. But sometimes we have games. Maria used to be a teacher, and so she loves to quiz people.
I really do.
So check us out online at peculiarpicture.show. That's our website, and you can stream all episodes there.
Or you can find us on any major podcast channel.
Okay, we're back.
Yes.
Still drinking the same cocktail as before, but we're halfway there.
Tastes like juice.
It tastes like sweet juice.
Yeah.
It's but very, also, very, it also very feels... Sweet. It feels like a slap in the face after that delightful cocktail that we did last.
This is upsetting.
The Clover Club. To go from the Clover Club to this is insulting.
It's disrespectful.
It is. It is rude. Okay. So in April of 1990, 2 years after the killing of Hong Pao Lee, Lee's family accepted a $1 million settlement from the county funded by taxpayers.
That's not enough. But
But funded by taxpayers and not the sheriff's department. Mm. During his investigation into the Linwood Vikings for the Lee case, David Lynn uncovered several other incidents that later became part of a federal civil rights lawsuit. More than 70 Linwood residents joined a class action suit claiming that deputies engaged in harassment, brutality, and terrorism, particularly against Black and Latino people. Mm. At least 30 people saw their homes ripped apart as they were held at gunpoint.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And at least 100 people suffered lifelong trauma from these incidents. At the time, Viking deputies claimed that they were just a harmless social club.
Baking together, you know, going bowling, just being social.
Just beating people with...
Just being real social as we terrorize ethnic communities.
Yes, no big deal. So there are too many incidents named in this suit for me to go through all of them, but they were brutal. And unlike the street gangs that they claimed to be fighting against, the Vikings knew that the law was on their side.
Oh, yeah.
And they could do whatever they want.
They are the law.
Exactly. Lynn said, quote, "They had all the earmarks of a regular street gang and should have been treated as such, but of course they never were." According to this lawsuit, deputies frequently used excessive force during arrests, often beating people so violently that they were left with lifelong pain and injuries. Often after arrest, deputies would handcuff their victims and put them in the back of squad cars, not seat belted, and they would drive so recklessly to the station to you know, bring them in, that they would be violently tossed around the back seat, smashing into windows and metal barriers on the drive.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised because I've heard of similar things happening. I'm just thinking of like the Montgomery bus boycott. Like,
totally.
They strategically would like take the fare from like black riders and then start driving insane as they're just trying to walk to the back of the bus where they're only allowed to sit.
The bus drivers would do this.
Bus drivers, yeah.
Yeah. So deputies would often also beat their victims with heavy metal flashlights.
Oh, God.
And batons.
Those flashlights are really heavy. I know,
yes. They would kick and stomp on people's heads and limbs with riot boots.
What?
Their victims were often arrested on trumped-up charges.
Did anyone die?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking maglights plus, like, jackboots.
Yeah. That's exactly.
That's, like, what?
Yes. And the DAs would just cover it up. Yeah. It was fine. No big deal. But so their victims were often arrested on trumped-up charges that would not stick in court. But if their victims went to the hospital to seek help for their injuries that they sustained when being arrested, the sheriffs would show up at the hospital to arrest them again on new phony charges to get them away from hospital workers who would listen to their, you know, stories. Most of their victims were young black or Latino men who were somehow believed to be associated with street gangs. But it
they
never
fit the description, exactly. Don't you know?
Exactly. It never seemed to matter if there was any real evidence against them. Their friends and families were also being targeted because of their supposed potential link to street gangs. On several occasions, large groups of deputies would raid family homes or businesses, destroying everything in their path, seemingly just for fun. In almost all of these incidents, deputies would show up and hold the entire family at gunpoint. And
this is
basically,
so fucked up.
I know. Yeah.
This is like really like.
This was so hard to research terrorism. And read about. Literally,
like what
terrorism.
You're doing is like what they do. What we like to point to, like, oh, this is what third world like police states do, mm-hmm. And it's like we're doing this in LA.
Exactly. Yeah.
What does that make us?
Yeah. In one raid, a bedridden woman who was recovering from surgery was lifted out of bed and forcibly moved throughout the home.
What?
As they raided the home. Yes, the police like carried her around because she couldn't stand in the bed for whatever reason. They decided. In another incident, deputies assaulted a woman who was 8 months pregnant.
I mean, I'm not surprised by that.
In another, an 82-year-old great-grandmother.
Oh, God, an 82-year-old? This is what you're doing to an 82-year-old?
Held down in bed with a shotgun pointed in her face. Literally held down with a shotgun pointed in her face.
I get, like, abusing pregnant women, especially if, like, it's not your child in there because, you know, you have this disconnect between the community that you're serving and just like people in general that you think are human. Mm-hmm. There's that disconnect for you as a public servant somehow. But to hurt someone who is so elderly, 80.
Yeah.
80. Like, you're great, great.
Great-great-grandmother, 82 years old.
82 years old.
Shotgun in her face, held down in bed.
I honestly don't know how you do that.
Yeah.
How does one do that? I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
But that is out of the realm of like normal psychological behavior.
Totally. When the young men that they were there to harass and arrest were arrested, they would usually take them out of the home, away from the home, before they would beat them.
Of
severely
course.
Kicking,
yeah.
Choking, beating. Yeah. Flashlights, again, were common weapons, batons, lasers, police dogs, not lasers, tasers.
Yeah. Tasers,
why
yeah.
Did I say lasers? Police dogs were common weapons. It was also not uncommon for legs to be slammed in car doors, bones to be broken, fingers to be dislocated. During one arrest, a deputy shoved a loaded revolver into a young man's mouth and told him, "Every time you see us, we will fuck with you."
I mean, duh, bitch.
Yeah.
I know who the cops are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is no shock to us. Yeah. During another arrest, one
Go
man.
Go on. Yeah.
One man was kicked in the face and choked into unconsciousness twice.
Oh, fuck.
And then
oh my God.
Brought out of unconsciousness by being electrocuted with a taser twice.
Oh, my God. That's so sadistic.
Yes. During the same arrest, another man had a shotgun held to his face. Holy and shit. Throughout the beating, deputies were telling these men, yeah, N-words, you ain't got no rights.
Well, it's true.
Yeah.
But, like, damn.
In another incident, three young men were arrested and beaten, and one of the deputies shoved a loaded revolver into one man's mouth and threatened to blow his head off, while another deputy put a gun against the other man's head and pulled the trigger, but the gun didn't go off. Like, it wasn't loaded. He was doing it just to, like,
to show. Okay.
Fuck with him. Yeah.
Whoa, scary.
So fucking scary. Like, I literally psychopaths. Shit your fucking pants scary.
I mean, obviously, you're about to die.
Literally, yeah.
Whoa.
Deaths were not uncommon. Again,
they're just, you know, they're just protecting and serving.
This is the community that they're sworn to protect.
Come on, they're just out here being philanthropists.
Yeah.
Trying to save people.
They're Batman.
Yeah.
Bruce Wayne. They're
but
here.
Not, well, they're paid, I think, too much. But yeah, they're not. Their superpower isn't wealth.
Yeah. So deaths were not uncommon, and falsified reports were par for the course.
Bad apples, as they say, but also they never toss out the bad apples, so.
No, they let them fester and infect all the other apples.
And it's just so weird, because they say that they're, like, these professionals, like, we're here, like, we've been doing this for a really long time, we're essentially, this is what we do. But then they see people who do things that are wrong and they never criticize.
No, they're like, I'm going to do that too.
As a doctor, you're a good doctor and you see malpractice. You're like, that is a bad doctor.
No, they're like, this is how we do it.
You can use your words and say, like, that man deserves to lose his license. But yeah, there's never that in the police context.
No, they're like, that's just how it's done.
It's like, oh, he was just afraid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is the, like, the get out of jail free card for all
self-defense.
Bad behavior. Self-defense. He didn't know.
His back was turned, but I didn't know if he had lasers in the back of his head or not. But the entire structure is built to protect them, so it doesn't matter whether you do your job well or not. So this case against the Linwood Sheriff's Department was met with skepticism by local press, because at the time, most people believed that the police and the district attorneys could do no wrong. They're the good guys. They're here to protect and serve. But when one man who was involved in this suit, who was like a plaintiff? No, plaintiff.
Plaintiff, yeah.
Yeah. A young woman who was part of a career development program with the sheriff's department went to this private investigator, David Lee. He said, quote, she overheard deputies planning a hit. That night he was killed, they made it look like a drive-by shooting. Lynn's sources in the department confirmed that this had happened before.
Of course.
Lynn wasn't sure what to do next, though. He said, we didn't know what to do with something like this. Who do you call? So he took it to the FBI. His team was livid because they said the FBI couldn't be trusted either. And they were right.
Yeah, FBI is not who you.
Yeah.
Do. I mean, but then again, it's like, who do you
who
go
do
to?
You call? Yeah.
Yeah.
Lynn's witness later recanted her story because the investigators threatened to send her to prison if any deputies were convicted.
It's so common.
In audio tapes and transcripts of the interviews with Lynn, she expressed frustration that her FBI handler had seemingly intentionally ruined attempts to secretly record incriminating statements from one of the deputies involved in the shooting.
Yeah, this reminds me of, like, the School of the Americas. There was, like, that one woman who
tried to come forward.
Columbia to Miami. She's like, let me contact the FBI.
No.
They're going to help me. And they were trying to tell her to...
No, you didn't
to
see
recant.
Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. You didn't see what your eyeballs saw.
Exactly.
Don't you know?
Yeah.
If you want your family to survive. So
exactly.
She's still in hiding because of this.
Unbelievable. So in 1995, this case finally went to trial and the county moved to settle, awarding the plaintiffs $7.5 million. An additional $1.5 million was earmarked for.
It would be cheaper just to root out these awful gangs within your whole department.
Seriously,
right? Because this is like probably the first of many lawsuits.
It wasn't even the first. Yeah, it was one of many.
Oh God, why are you doing this? Yeah.
An additional $1.5 million was earmarked for sheriff's department's reforms.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Yes, we got to reform.
The LA Times reported several weeks later that attorneys for the county estimated that if all the Linwood cases went to trial, potential damages and attorney fees could have reached as high as $18.5 million. The judge in this case wrote of his decision, "The actions of many deputies working in the Linwood substation are motivated by racial hostility. These deputies regularly disregard the civil rights of individuals they have sworn to protect." Duh. Many of the incidents which brought about this motion involved a group of Linwood area deputies who are members of a neo-Nazi white supremacist gang, the Vikings, which exists with the knowledge of departmental policymakers. So the Linwood station closed in 1994 because of this trial, or at least largely because of the trial. Where all the Linwood Vikings were stationed. Okay. Yeah, that was their headquarters originally.
There's no police department anymore in that area?
They built a new station there. It's now called the Century Station. But it's in Linwood. So it did essentially nothing to deter the Vikings.
Cool.
Instead, the Vikings learned that even a federal trial that cost the county millions couldn't touch them. In fact, no significant reforms were adopted, and many of the Vikings were promoted and moved into different jurisdictions where they had the opportunity to share their tactics with other departments and bring in new members into the fold.
Wow.
So just spread the disease to other areas of LA County. Yes.
This is awful.
Yes. So today, the Vikings are no longer around. The Linwood Vikings are no longer a sheriff's deputy gang.
In its current form, what have they changed into?
They have, since the Vikings have gone away, dozens of other deputy gangs have popped up in their place.
There we go.
Yes.
Power vacuum.
That we know of, there are currently at least 18 gangs within the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department, including the Regulators, the Cowboys, Rattlesnakes, the Executioners,
oh my God,
the Pirates, the Tasmanian Devils,
grow up,
the Choir Boys,
stop it,
the Jump Out Boys, the Grim Reapers,
oh my God,
and a black gang called the Buffalo Soldiers, just to name a few.
Oh no.
Yes. But I mean, in LA County, one county Southern California.
In one county.
Yes.
What's happening in all the other counties?
Seriously, yeah. Oh, because nothing much has been done to stop the spread of these gangs, continue to cost California taxpayers millions of dollars each and every single year. Now, if the Linwood Vikings sounded familiar to you, dear listener, it's probably because of the story of Frankie Carrillo. This story has been getting a lot of attention in the media lately. And I may actually, you haven't heard of Frankie Carrillo? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm probably going to come back and revisit his story. I originally had intended to include his story in my outline, but it was just there's too much. I had to sort of pull it aside and I think I'm going to come back to it for a mini-sode. It has been getting a lot of attention in the media recently. Basically, what happened was a Viking deputy mistakenly believed that 16-year-old Frankie Carrillo.
Oh my God, child.
Child, literally.
Oh
He was 10th grade, I believe. A Viking deputy mistakenly believed that he was in a gang called the Young Crowd. He was not in the Young Crowd gang, but because the Vikings thought that he was, they framed him for murder.
What?
Framed him. He didn't commit this murder.
But, why?
Because they were just we need to get a gang member off the street. This kid's clearly in a gang, even though we have no proof. Get him off the street, send him to prison before he does something bad. Because a murder has happened. It's clearly gang related. He probably did it anyways.
What? Okay, literally. Sure. But also, what the fuck?
They framed Frankie Carrillo for a murder he didn't commit at 16 years old. God, and he spent 20 years of his life in prison.
Oh, my God.
In 2011, he was finally exonerated. And in 2016, L.A. County settled Carrillo's civil suit for over $10 million. Over $500,000 for each year of his life that he lost in prison.
Okay.
So it was recently featured.
Is he still alive?
He's okay. Yeah, he's
okay. I thought it was like Khalif Browder, who like he got out and then he committed suicide.
No, he's still
like all of the pain.
As far as I know, he's still alive. Unfortunately, cases like this are far from rare.
I mean, they're so common. They're so common. Like, especially like the cops just like fabricating evidence. Especially if you're black or brown.
Totally.
Like,
yeah.
They just don't like the look of you, and they can easily put you away for life.
Yeah.
And then 100%. Like, put you into solitary when you rebel because you've been sentenced unjustly. It's a holdover from slavery.
Absolutely. That's all it is. Yeah. And civil suits like this that are brought by victims of these deputy gangs have cost LA County over $100 million in the past 30 years.
Wow.
$100 million.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. So before we wrap up today, I just want to say that a lot of my information for today's story came from a 15-part series on the history of Los Angeles deputy gangs called A History of Violence by Cerise Castle for Knock LA. It's very detailed and very dense, but it's
Knock
really...
Knock LA is like it's a podcast?
It's an independent community journalism project.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
Cool.
It's very, very informative and dense, but it's a 15-part series, so it's like if you have the time to read one at a time, it's totally worth it. Most of my information came from like two or three of these 15 parts, because I was focusing more on the Linwood Vikings than the other gangs, and this goes through like all of it from the 70s to today.
Wow.
There's one whole section on Frankie Carrillo and the trial, but we'll talk about this more most likely in the next mini. Yeah,
that was a lot. Thank you.
Yeah.
Jesus.
It was really hard to research
this
story.
Thank you for looking into this.
Oh my God.
Like, oh God.
Not only am I seeing all of this violence and having to read about it over and over and over, but I'm also seeing the same people.
Oh God.
Like the same deputies' names come up over and over as they're promoted through the ranks.
But they're just bad apples, don't you know?
And they're just climbing higher and higher and higher and spreading their poison to further and further people. Oh my God.
Yeah, the fact that they're like being promoted and put in positions of leadership, like, oh, now you're in charge of a whole division and you can spread your like violent nonsense.
And most of them, because this all happened in the 90s, most of them are now retired and making six-figure pensions, sitting pretty at home, collecting
At least they're not hurting people.
I guess. But they paved the way for much more hurt.
Oh, you're right. It's so vile that they're able... I mean, I assume they're able to like feel good about what they do, and like because they're like fighting.
One of them in particular,
fighting crime in their minds.
Yeah, I'll get more into the whole Frankie Carrillo story in the mini. But like the deputy who was sort of instrumental in putting him away has zero regrets and is like thinks that he's a good guy, and Frankie Carrillo deserved to go away, even though he had no proof whatsoever, no evidence at all. He's still certain to this day that
because
he decided, like, he's a fucking poor brown man, so clearly he did it. He had friends who were in the gang, so he must have been in the gang too.
What a career to be in. You can be wrong and like be promoted and like be bad at your job and be violent and like actually kill people. It's not like you're fucking up a Excel like spreadsheet. You know, you're actually killing someone
literally,
and like,
or like stealing 20 years of their life away from them.
Oh God, you're right. Our drinks are empty. We just had all of the liquors and some blue Curacao, you know, for spice, and some Sprite
seasoning. This is how white people do seasoning.
We
make it blue.
Oh my God. Make it look like it's going to give you cancer.
Yes.
And then call me.
Or clean your drain.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes. So bright. Mm-hmm. Even when mixed, I guess, with the clear liquor. So it's just as bright. So, yeah. It looks poisonous, but we drank it and it tasted like juice.
I won't say delicious, but it was enjoyable in some way.
Oh, it tastes. I thought it was delicious, yeah. Because it tasted like a sweet type of juice.
Yes. Yeah.
Sweeter than juice.
Yes.
Sweeter than Kool-Aid.
Ecto Cooler.
Ooh, I loved Ecto Cooler.
Same.
So our Ecto Cooler is empty. So I guess we're done.
Oh my God. The next time we have to do a 90s story, I'm recreating a boozy Ecto Cooler.
Oh, please. I would love to see it just like in a juice box somehow. Yes.
Oh my God. If I can find an old juice box with Slimer.
eBay.
Yes.
eBay.
And fill it with vodka blue curacao.
Oh God. So America's history-est juice. We just make a boozy form of
Ecto Cooler.
Cooler, yes. Thank you so much for listening to Beyond Reproach. This has been Stephanie Domingo.
And Tex Lerzel.
Thank you to Tim Clough, our editor, sound engineer, our podfather. We cannot do this without him.
Couldn't be done.
It would be illegal.
What a story.
Beyond Reproach is proudly recorded in Bushwick, Brooklyn, on land belonging to the Lenape Nation. Please note we are not historians. We are just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. Full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. Written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone who you think would be into it. Make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop on beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves. We have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.